quiet confidence. This is the story of Cornell Vineyards on Spring Mountain in Napa Valley, California. Written by R.H. Drexel for The Wine Palette. Nature is a study in resilience. Along Spring Mountain Road, just outside of St. Helena and west of the Spring Mountain District, the Mayacamas mountain range is strewn with the skeletons of trees that perished in the glass fire of 2020. The pitch black remains cascade across the landscape, but they have been sublimated by new growth. Young trees, underbrush, wild grasses, and wildflowers have taken over. The cyclical rhythm of the natural world announcing itself. Cornell Vineyards is a part of this dramatic landscape. Cornell Vineyards is a mountain estate with vineyards planted in elevations ranging from 1,500 to 1,920 feet. The estate's mountain terroir feeds off the mysterious Grand Mayacamas Range, born of a subducting oceanic plate. Cornell's 20 distinctive blocks are quilted into ancient seabed, with each block emerging as its own ecosystem with its own personality. A combination of plant material, soil, volcanic, sandstone, rock, clay, exposure, blueprint, and intent. The wines of this estate are consistently balanced, pretty, age-worthy, and generous in their nuances. They are wines of place and possess the kind of original, precise voice that only obsessively farmed, obsessively raised wines can project. At the center of this estate is the Cornell Vineyards team, an in-house vineyard crew who, along with their families, live full-time, year-round on the property, and winemakers Elizabeth Tangney and consultant Françoise Péchon. Péchon has been with the project from the beginning, but Tangney joined the team as winemaker in 2018. Henry and Vanessa Cornell live in New York City, but visit the estate often. They otherwise trust the team they've put in place to shepherd each vintage to its natural conclusion. Tangney was initially drawn to Cornell Vineyards because, like previous estates she'd worked at in Sonoma County, Saint-Emilion, Napa, and Paso Robles, the Cornells prioritized mindful farming. Still, she tells me, everything about a young brand sort of screams too much work, too much energy. But when I met the Cornells, I was just kind of drawn in. I came on board officially at the beginning of 2018 and have been here ever since, tackling this hillside while going along with the ups and downs we've had. In late September of 2020, Cornell Vineyards lost 10 acres, half of its 20 total planted acres, to the glass fire, as well as 3 homes across their 240 acres of mostly wild, untamed forest land. Miraculously, the oak tree where Henry Cornell proposed to his wife, Vanessa, was spared, as was the oak grove surrounding it, a collection of beehives, and the estate's vineyard house, a 1970s Sears Roebuck kit home that today serves as a gathering place for the Cornell family and their team. Although Cornell Vineyards just celebrated its 25th anniversary, it is one of the lesser-known estates in the Napa Valley, preferring to project a quiet confidence over aggressive ostentation. I tell Tangney that I've visited plenty of estates that are farmed well, only to discover later that the wines they've produced have been fashioned in the cellar to taste luxurious, often per ownership's request, meaning overly oaked, overly extracted, sometimes with traces of residual sugar. The wines of Cornell Vineyard are luxurious to me in another way entirely. They have energetic aromatics, well-managed tannins, whether fine-grained or rustic, a beautifully cohesive texture, and length for days. "I'm very lucky to have Henry and Vanessa," she says in response. "We're lucky to have found each other. We all agree with less manipulation, with a bit lower alcohol, a clear, true expression of the vineyard, rather than wines wrapped in ripeness and oak. We're looking for a very peaceful and clear expression from the site. My process in the winery is to really let the fruit express itself." Tangney studied viticulture at Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo. "I was a farmer first," she says, "and then learned winemaking. To me, it's about understanding the fruit as it comes into the winery. Being a winemaker does not make the fruit you're working with any better. you have to really understand the potential of the fruit from the vineyard and the site. There are so many decisions we make in the vineyard that have a huge impact on the wines. If you're not out there the entire season understanding the nuances between blocks, you're missing a huge portion of the story. Like many farmers who spend the bulk of their time in the natural world, Tangney Project's self-assuredness and a persistent composure, measured by a pronounced humility. Of the blocks she farms with the year-round vineyard crew, she says, "We're dealing with an ecosystem and a whole world that, quite frankly, we don't even fully understand yet. The interactions between soil and plant biomes. Part of understanding these is absolutely intuition. When you're in the vineyard every day, walking through the vines and blocks, you absorb part of the ecosystem, you become a part of it, and every single day in the vineyard brings greater understanding. I'm better able, gut-wise, to make irrigation decisions, leafing decisions, and many other seemingly small decisions that have big impacts because I'm paying attention. I think it's important to have temperature data, irrigation data, soil moisture data. Science certainly comes into it, but I like to be in the vineyard, watching, seeing what's going on. Because Tangney is a vineyard-focused winemaker, her year is long and busy. While many winemakers hit the road for market visits and sales trips in late winter and early spring, Tangney returns to the vineyard in late January when pruning is underway, working alongside the vineyard crew, showing them what shoot length she'll be wanting based upon the previous season's performance. All the while, she's tracking how the rain falls, whether there are big gaps between rainstorms, whether it's raining every couple of weeks, or if there are prolonged dry spells between rains. This gives me an indication of how the vineyard is set up for the growing season, she says. How it's doing nutritionally, and what level of moisture we have in the soil when we start the season. Once bud break happens, we start walking blocks. And I was just out in a block last week, and we've been dry for a little while. So, on that particular rootstock soil combination, we turned the irrigation on. I have to be out there to make those decisions early. We're managing crop load, and leaf coverage, making sure the vines have the nutrients they need to go all the way through to harvest. Then, leading up to harvest, she's monitoring anthocyanins, as they are for her important indicators of when the pick date will be, as she believes color peak is important to capture. Then, she's out tasting regularly, ensuring there are no sections of the vineyard underperforming that need to be carved away. During harvest, she's on the crush pad and in the winery. But soon after, she's back in the vineyard worrying about seeding cover crop, composting, and end-of-the-season nutrient management. Occasionally, especially soon after the wines are barreled down, she's topping barrels and stirring wines. Mixing and keeping things in suspension can really build out the mouthfeel and texture of a wine. After the wines are racked, that's the last bit of air they might get. And then, I really like them to rest until I put together a blend before harvest. So, my 2025s might get blended in July or August of this year, a base blend to put things together, and then I'll just leave them until the following year. And it's time for bottling. Her only downtime comes in late November and throughout the month of December, during which she'll enjoy the slow rhythm of the holidays with her husband, who is also a winemaker. The pair have grown accustomed to viewing the year's end as a moment to breathe deeply and reset before a new growing season begins. She's particular about the cooperage she uses and prefers older barrels, mentioning she still uses barrels that were procured in 2015. Tangney says that for her, barrels are a spice rack versus a major part of the Cornell Vineyard's identity. Often the old barrels just have this beautiful purity of fruit, and there's a calmness to the wine. That has been the driving force in increasing my use of used oak. When I taste those barrels, they're just so clear, and they present the vineyard so beautifully. I really love that. The barrels I have from 2015 aren't really imparting oak flavor anymore. They're a vessel. Tangney enjoys interacting with the Cornell customer base about their wines. It's a reminder of how differently the Cornell wines are perceived. Customers who have a familiarity with other wines from the region, she tells me, often expect wines that are more heavily oaked and higher in alcohol. The customer perceives that polish as sweetness, she says. With our Cornell wines, they are paying attention to different things, other flavors and nuances. Structure. I like to talk to customers about why and how we make wine that way. I wonder aloud what wines she enjoys drinking to stay inspired. I like to branch out and drink internationally because I drink so much domestic wine through work and just living here. For inspiration, I like to see what other countries are doing. A couple years ago, I got into Beaujolais because I just love the aromatics, and the Côte de Pie wines are gorgeous. And I did a big exploration into Loire as I was studying Cabernet Franc, preparing to make our North Bloc wine. It was interesting to taste some of the nuances from the different regions, especially as they relate to water in the soils. And I'm in a tasting group, and we're doing a year of pasta, which means we're tasting a lot of Italian wines, which I find very inspirational. It's very interesting to learn about their differences structurally and how those wines feel in the mouth. I guess I'm always sort of exploring. Because Cornell Vineyards is so remote, I ask Tangney if she feels like part of the Napa Valley wine community. The industry is highly social, and after work tastings, dinners out with colleagues, and industry parties are the norm. Oftentimes, winemakers will bring their wines to industry get-togethers in the hopes of getting feedback on their work. My community isn't in Napa. I live in Calistoga. Those are the people who I generally see most days. When I'm tasting wine, it's about wine quality and wine value. There are so many wines internationally and across the U.S. that I'm not going to say yes or no to a wine based on label pedigree. It's what's inside. I'm dazzled by Tangney's take on Cabernet Franc and Merlot as it manifests itself in the 2023 Cornell Vineyards North Block. A moving, evocative wine. Its lithe texture, an unexpected combination of fine-grained tannins and a distant crunchiness that keeps the middle of the wine vital and vibrant on the tongue, completes it. The aromatics of its mountain fruit origins are so lifted that it's almost like there's a cool breeze blowing through the glass. I make Cabernet Franc in a style very different than Cabernet Sauvignon, purposely to preserve aromatics and nuance, Tangney tells me. I didn't focus on structure, so I'm surprised with how much structure is present naturally. With our Merlot, I went with the same clone that we had had before, but in a different location, it is very pretty and less structured than I thought it would be, because this clone is usually pretty tightly wound. When I look for Merlot, I look towards Northern Italian wines. I've had some fun Merlots out of Northern Italy that have subtle structure, a full mouth, and nuanced flavors. A juicy character without being simple. I'm looking to capture that beautiful side of Merlot. And Cabernet Franc is really about the aromatic profile and walking on that green-violet side of things. Both wines are right in line with how I wanted them to be. I've been very pleased with the North Block wine. I have to mirror Tangney's enthusiasm for this Cabernet Franc Merlot blend. I opened a bottle at home a couple of weeks after speaking to Tangney. I'm excited to assess it away from the beauty of Cornell Vineyards. Tasting on site is fun to do. But sometimes it's hard to remain objective regarding what's in the glass when one's surrounded by the most fresh-smelling wild countryside, when there's great food on the table, when one is surrounded by genteel company, and everything is impeccably presented. I had tasted through their current lineup when I visited Cornell Vineyards a while back, but the North Block wasn't available at the time, so I'm looking forward to assessing it at home. Away from any distractions, no matter how lovely. Still, I do have a routine when I taste at home. First and foremost, I like to enjoy myself. This marks the 40th year I've been in the wine space, I started writing about wine around the same time I started falling out of love with it, at least the business side of wine. And I didn't want that to happen, so writing has become a way to stay in love with all things wine. Enjoying these in-home tastings matters to me. While the 2023 North Block was in the decanter getting some air, about 1.5 hours, I opened most of the windows in our small house. At the time, we were having some rainstorms where I live, Paso Robles, so the sky, still overcast, was fragrant and fresh. I put on some Massive Attack and turned on a soft lamp. I had the North Block chilled down to about 55 degrees, so that as it warmed up in the glass, I'd still have a good amount of runway before it got to room temperature. A chameleon-like wine, it kept revealing more of itself as it stretched in the glass. Sometimes, with wines that possess that rare combination of freshness, depth, and nuance, one gets a glimpse of how special their tertiary flavors are going to be. That certainly happened with this wine. As it opened, its aromatics and then flavors kept changing, evolving, blending into one another so that at one point, there was a current of aromatics coursing through my glass that conjured raspberries wet from a salty Pacific mist near a forest of oaks and chanterelles next to a bed of violets and wet concrete. Just layers and layers of nuance that would someday reveal an evolution of fragrances and their stories, made malleable by the banks of memory. It's an expensive wine at $250 a bottle. That this price point is set by a winery now in its 25th year versus one announcing its first release, which with luxury producers happens all too often these days, makes the heady price point a bit more palatable. The balance of the Cornell Vineyards lineup looks like this. Cornell Estate Cabernet Sauvignon, $195. Cornell Commitment Estate Cabernet Sauvignon, $325. Cornell Courtship, $95, and the Cornell Chardonnay, $95. The Courtship in particular overperforms for its price point and is a great introduction to an important estate.